just goes to show that the blood you bleed is just the blood you own. We were a pair, but I saw you there, too much to bear. You were my life, but life is far away from fair. Was I stupid to love you? Was I reckless to help? Was it obvious to everybody else that I've fallen for a lie?
Bond is back. James Bond, that is. That's the title track performed by Billie Eilish. The 25th film featuring the iconic British agent is titled No Time to Die, and what makes this film intriguing, at least to some, is that Daniel Craig's portrayal of Bond now has a through story that runs from his first appearance as Bond to his last. He's the only person who's played James Bond who has a complete story arc. James Bond has had an enormous impact on our culture, and that makes this a film worth discussing. With us to do this are two screenwriters who have spent a lot of time mulling over the significance of this franchise and what a franchise it is. They are Mitch Bryan, who doubles as a UMKC film professor. Mitch, welcome back.
Great to be here, Steve.
John Ingle just won the Best Horror Screenplay at the 2020 Austin Film Festival, along with his co-writer, Sean Jordan. John, nice to have you, too.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And I should point out that Mitch and John are the hosts of the 007x7 podcast, as well as the Alien Minute podcast. Mitch, this film, No Time to Die, has a runtime of 2 hours and 43 minutes. That makes it a whopper of a film. Does it go without saying that this is the longest Bond film ever made?
It is. They've been inching up minute by minute over the last two or three, but this is the record one, yeah. It's
and
long.
The opening credits, Mitch, don't start until 25 minutes into the film.
Yeah, it has an extraordinary couple of opening scenes. It's really something. And yeah, by the time the credits roll, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm a half an hour into this movie.
John, the obvious question is, I'm planning to see it this weekend. Is it going to hold my interest for 2 hours and 43 minutes?
I think so. It definitely did for me. While I didn't find it a perfect film by any means, it's got its flaws. I think at the very least, Craig's performance will carry you through. I think he understands the role here so well, and what he's trying to do in his what he knew to be his last performance going in, that you can really feel the emotion and what he's trying to bring to the film all the way through into what I thought was an overall satisfying ending. So, yeah, I believe it will.
How about you, Mitch?
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm eager to see it again because there's just so much stuff coming at you. I was never bored, but there's just a lot, you know, and if you love James Bond the way that I do, there's even more.
You know, my impression from watching the trailer, and that's all I've seen so far, is just what you said, Mitch. They're throwing everything in the bag into this film. I mean, it's everything that Bond's ever done and a whole lot more.
Well, you know, these movies, when they came out in the early 60s, one a year from 62 to 65, they established their own genre. They were such a huge cultural phenomenon. There's nothing that we can point to that's like it, except, you know, maybe when Star Wars came out and that kind of impact. And mm-hmm. So they have to serve the genre that they exist in, and then they have to serve the fans, and then they have to serve this story that has taken place over five films. And so there is a lot of stuff to be done.
John, can you run down the plot for us? I mean, do I care about the plot? Can you run it down, or what should I be looking for here?
That's a good question, because that is the one part that gets maybe a little too complicated.
Oh, that's what I was worried about. Yeah.
Yeah. So because Mitch and I had a little discussion about it after we saw it, and we had to ask a lot of questions about what was the motivation of the villain, for instance. Ultimately, I don't think I cared enough for it to ruin the movie. Because as I said before, I'm here with Bond. And if Bond is going in for the mission, I'm just going to trust that he knows what's going on.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure he succeeds. But as far as the plot goes, I will say that it does carry over from Spectre, as you suggested earlier, that this is a full story arc for Craig's Bond. So we do have a love story at the center of it, which I think is the emotional strength of the film that really feeds, like Craig really feeds off of that in his performance as well. That kind of makes the plot elements of the, you know, the spy craft a little bit irrelevant to me, at least. But I think you'll follow Lea Seydoux plays his love interest. And I think she's going to have such a fantastic performance as well. I think that'll carry you through plot wise.
Mitch, should I care about the plot?
No, I pretty much agree with John. I think that the plot is there and it moves things along and there's plenty of plot. And so we may not totally understand all the intricacies of maybe what the villain is up to, but there's a lot of other story stuff going on, including, you know, the fact that James Bond is coming back in, having been away for 5 years. And as is always the case with James Bond films, the world has changed. And that's one of the reasons these movies are so wonderful, because they are now, the old ones are historical artifacts, but they're always changing with the time and evolving. And that's been a challenge to James Bond as a character. And it really is in this movie.
Well, let's give our listeners a sense of what No Time to Die sounds like, at least. This is a scene that features Bond and Nomi, who now carries the 007 designation. They're getting the gadgets they'll need from Q just before they take off on this mission.
Bond, your watch. It contains a limited radius, electromagnetic pulse. It'll short any circuit in a hardwired network if you get close enough.
Mm-hmm. And how strong is it?
It's fairly strong.
Fairly strong? What's that mean?
We haven't had the chance to test it properly, just be careful. Right, this is QDAR. We'll map the space as you move through it. Don't touch that. And smart blood. We'll track you. Oops. And your vitals. Bond, you don't mind a shot or two whilst at work, shall we?
Well, I haven't had a drink for 3 or 4 hours.
Wow. Doesn't sound like you. Ow!
Good.
John, how cool are the gadgets?
The gadgets are pretty cool in this movie. I think they kind of take a while to appear, and you actually played the clip that leads us into the coolest gadget in the movie, which I'm not going to go into detail about because I didn't have any idea what was coming. And I thought it was really cool when it happened. So I'm going to leave that one for people to see for themselves. But I thought that scene in particular really gets us right into the classic franchise obligations that they stuck to, as far as, here's some gadgets. Here's Q explaining them quickly. Here's a mildly acrimonious exchange between Bond and Q. All those things that have been going on since the 60s when Sean Connery was James Bond, and that fans like Mitch and I find very satisfying.
Oh, absolutely. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about the new James Bond film, the 25th film in the franchise. It's called No Time to Die. It's out and open right now. You know, Mitch, there are 25 Bond films, as I just said. Does this one rank in the top 5, the top 10? Where are we here?
Oh, that's a really good question, because it's really hard for me to rank a lot of these movies. I can point to the bad ones and I can point to the great ones, but I definitely think it's in the upper tier. I was really satisfied by it. And I thought it's a very, very good movie.
But it seems like, John, everybody's ranking these Bond. I've seen 3 or 4 rankings out on the internet. Everybody's got something going.
Well, I have a hard time ranking them as well, because I'm a Connery Bond guy. Like, pretty much if it was just Connery and maybe George Lazenby's entry of on Her Majesty's Secret Service and no more after that, I would have been satisfied. And the Craig Bonds are so far from those, as far as everything about how movies are made, how stories are told, that I have a really hard time ranking them together. I think all the Craigs are pretty good. As a matter of fact, I rewatched Spectre last night and was much more impressed with it than the first time I saw it, and thought, man, this is a really solid run of films. And it was good to get this one with the closure. So now we have a solid arc, as you suggested earlier.
You know, Mitch, Sean Connery, you know, is and was and will ever be a legend. And here we are talking about Daniel Craig, you know, I think largely in the same paragraph, at least. You know, everyone's wondering, a lot of people ask, is he the best James Bond? How do you compare him to Sean Connery? What does he bring that Sean Connery doesn't? How do you evaluate all this?
I think that they're neck and neck. They're my two favorite Bonds, that's for sure.
Yeah, me too.
They have a hard edge to them, which is how Ian Fleming conceived that character. There's probably more emotional textual kind of qualities to Daniel Craig. You can feel him, you can touch him, he's close, he's relatable, whereas Connery always had a little bit of distance. And so maybe that's the only difference, is that maybe he's just a tiny bit more emotionally relatable than the Connery Bond.
Don't you think maybe the culture today sort of demands that of a James Bond? We want to see a little more the real person underneath.
Oh, yeah. And not only does the culture demands it, the franchise demands it because they've been making it for 60 years. We live at a time where there's an extended Marvel universe where the backstory and the mythology of characters has become really important to audiences and fans. The ability to go back and rewatch the movies almost demands that. So I think those are all things that are important. I think just the fact of his emotional vulnerability, we expect deeper emotions from movies, and especially from James Bond, who has changed over the years. That's what makes these movies so much fun, is they evolve with the times and things shift.
You know, John, you say you're a Sean Connery guy. Has Daniel Craig surpassed him, or at least come close in your view?
This is where I have a hard time comparing. I think I with both of you that they're neck and neck to me. They're the two quintessential Bonds, but they're so far apart. Now, that's, you know, Mitch mentioned that Sean Connery had more of an emotional distance, and the one deeply emotional film that was made in the 60s was with George Lazenby on Her Majesty's Secret Service. Mm-hmm. And I've often argued, though, that I believe Connery could have pulled that off, too. I think Connery was a great actor that hadn't quite reached his potential yet when he was playing Bond. So I could see Connery accomplishing what Daniel Craig did. So to me, they're probably just neck and neck. But I do love the more sophisticated storytelling that we have now that, as you said, the audience demands.
So is there any question, Mitch, that Daniel Craig is now done as James Bond? Is there any turning back at this point?
No, I don't think so. And I think that that's great news for Bond fans, because he went out in a way that no other James Bond has gone out, you know, consciously knowing it was his last role. And I am really ready for a new James Bond. I can't wait for the next James Bond.
And can you imagine who that person might be?
Well, I don't know who, but John and I have been talking about this question. The Bond films have been very conscious of having stronger female characters,
right,
and kind of addressing the charges of sexism. You know, James Bond is also an imperial construct, you know, and so the question of, will the next Bond be a person of color, or will they be maybe Anglo-Indian or Anglo-African, to sort of try and wrestle with these issues of imperialism and race that are always part of James Bond films and especially part of the Ian Fleming books. So I don't know. I'm so excited. I would guess, but I would look like a fool, so I'm not going to do that.
John, could you imagine the Bond role being played by a woman?
I don't know. I could imagine them doing that, but at the same time, I feel like they could give another character, a woman, another character. It doesn't have to be Bond. You don't have to name her Jane Bond or something like that. I think they could create another franchise with a strong female character playing a spy that doesn't have to be a replacement to James Bond per se. Mm-hmm. So I could imagine it, but I'm not sure it's necessary. I think they could, you know, a great actress could accomplish a role in a big film that's not Bond, and we could be just as satisfied with that.
But there's absolutely no question, John, that James Bond will return again. Do I understand that correctly?
I can't imagine he won't. No, there's a lot of money in that franchise. They're not going to walk away from that. And I think there's a lot they could still do. And one of the things that they have the freedom with is that while they did have a continuity of story in this present franchise that just closed out, they also don't really care about canon that much. They reset things a lot. They can change time frames, timelines as much as they want. So we could go all the way back to a much younger Bond again and start over with somebody completely different and have a completely different set of characters at MI6 as well. So there's a lot of freedom there, and they're not going to walk away from it. There's no way.
Mitch, don't the closing credits indicate that James Bond will return?
They certainly do, and we would be heartbroken if that wasn't the last thing we read at the end of the credits.
Well, Mitch, I've read that this franchise is worth, the Bond franchise is worth $19 billion. It just staggering sum to me for a movie franchise. Why is it worth something like $19 billion bucks?
You know, I'm going to say one reason is because it is the not only the longest running continuing film series, but it's the biggest family business in the movie business. The Broccoli family has controlled the Bond films, and they have dictated how these movies are going to work. And the fact that they haven't been, you know, subsumed by corporate interests and that they've controlled James Bond themselves, I think has been a major factor in how this thing has continued.
Wow. You know, John, you both have made a point of saying here that this is the first Bond to have a complete story arc attached to him, Daniel Craig. What does that mean? And describe a little bit what that arch has looked like.
Well, we got in with Casino Royale, we got the introduction of 007. I believe he gets his numbers right at the beginning of the movie, and we see him sort of wobble through the first mission as a younger agent. He also meets a woman that ends up meaning something to him throughout the entire series. So in Vesper Lynd. So at that, they planted the seed of continuity where each film, there is some motivation for Bond from the previous film, all the way up to a point where in the Inspector, the last entry, they even summarize all the villains that he's fought so far in the series and place them all within the same organization, which is the titular Spectre. So that's sort of the Marvel, what Mitch mentioned earlier as being kind of the Marvel universe element of this, where they're borrowing from that idea that it's a series of episodes as opposed to just a series of films that are disconnected. In the end, I think they did okay with accomplishing that. With the satisfying closure of this arc, though, is with the character and the emotional part of the character, which is interesting to say about James Bond. I think we wouldn't have guessed that 20 years ago that was going to happen.
You know, the evolution of Bond's love interests are perhaps the most dramatic evolution, you know, in this series, Mitch. Is that fair? And so much has been made about that over the years.
Yeah, there's been a lot written in Bond scholarship, which is a thing. People study James Bond films.
Wow.
About this question of female competency and how in the earlier Bond films, the women were kind of damsels in distress, with a few exceptions, and Bond was rescuing them. And now we reach a point where the women characters in these films are as strong as Bond. They challenge him. They're competent. They're, in this case, we've got a woman who's been assigned the 007 number after Bond has retired. So it's just one of the things that makes these movies so much fun is like the female characters just are, you know, have gotten better and better.
Has James Bond himself evolved in the series, John?
Yeah, absolutely. He is. I mean, go back to Sean Connery's Bond, and boy, was he a questionable character at times. There wasn't much thought to his ethics often. And in Craig's Bond, if an ethical quandary arises, they deal with it within the film. They don't just let him behave flippantly as he wants to. They're actually interested in those questions and the repercussions from them. So that's a huge evolution over the decades.
So, Mitch, why are the two of you so absorbed by these films and by this character? What is it that has drawn you in? I mean, I get it, but what is it that has a special attachment for you?
Well, for me, the first movie I remember seeing ever was Goldfinger when I was 3.
There you go.
And
you remember seeing it?
I do. I remember the hat chopping off the statue's head, and it just just blew my little 3-year-old mind. And then I saw 7 or 8 of them, the next, all of the Bond films, the first 8 or 9, I guess, with my dad. And so, you know, that's personal. And I was even watching Spectre when I got the call that he had passed away. And so, you know, it's emotional. We all have these touchstones with films, and you know, different film series and different movies mean different things to different people. And for me, I'm going to be 60 in a couple of days, and James Bond is 60, so I have really grown up with these movies.
Well, happy birthday, Mitch, by the way. John, how about you? Why are you so taken with all this?
Well, it's my dad as well, and for me, it was, you know, almost all the first Bonds I saw were on, I think, the ABC Sunday Night Movie in the 80s.
Oh, wow.
So my dad and I would watch him, and he would always tell me how he read all the books in the 60s when he was a bachelor. And those stories always stuck with me. And I can't remember the first one I saw. But eventually, when we got to the Brosnan era, and even right at the end of Timothy Dalton's era, my dad and I would go see them all together. That kind of went away. He's still around, but we don't go to movies together anymore. But that kind of went away with Brosnan. But it's really, it is. It's seated in my dad and our relationship and the time we shared watching Bond together when I was a kid.
Mitch, tell us about your podcast, the 007x7 podcast.
Well, we are currently examining the film From Russia with Love, and we look at it in 7-minute segments. We've already done Dr. No, and I think it was 16 episodes. Wow. And so we, along with a guest, get together and we look at a small chunk of the movie, and we talk about the film, the larger aspects of the film. We talk about what's going on in those minutes dramatically. And we have had some extraordinary guests this season. In fact, we got to talk to Martine Beswick, who is in both From Russia with Love and Thunderball. She was one of the fighting gypsy women at the beginning of in From Russia with Love. And we've had Bond scholars, we've had super fans, and so a really fun conversation about, you know, our love and interest in these movies.
I gather you can get the 007x7 podcast wherever you get your podcasts, right?
It's right there waiting for you.
Oh, that's neat. Well, I sure appreciate you guys running through this new Bond film, the 25th in the franchise, No Time to Die. We were joined by Mitch Bryan, who doubles as a UMKC film professor, and John Ingle, who just won the Best Horror Screenplay at the 2020 Austin Film Festival. Thank you both for a great conversation. Always appreciate it.
See you later.
Thank you for having us on.